Welcome to the latest episode of Econ Insight from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey's economics team. Today we're focusing on the regional market for middle-skilled jobs, which have been drying up across the country over the past few decades. We're talking here about positions that require workers to have training beyond high school, but not necessarily a bachelor's degree. Researchers from the New York City Labor Market Information Service have been studying this market for roughly 2 years. Specifically, the center and the project's financial supporters wanted to know more about the equilibrium between employers' demand for middle-skilled workers and the regional education network's effort to offer relevant training. This has been the focus of much attention nationally among economists and policymakers. A senior researcher for the Federal Reserve Bank in Dallas wrote 3 years ago of a national employment scene that had, quote, grown increasingly polarized with concentrations on both ends of the skill and income spectra and a weakening band in the middle. The economist, Anton Cherimukhin, ended the report with this statement, quote, unfortunately, as computing power spreads and with more non-routine tasks becoming routine, the pace of labor market polarization is unlikely to slow down anytime soon. I recently spoke with the New York Labor Market Information Services Director, Leslie Hirsch, and its senior researcher, Ofranima Biyu, about their work. Their most recent report, which was released earlier this week, covers data for all relevant occupational groups with a special focus on healthcare. They expect it will be the first of numerous annual reports on the topic of middle-skill employment in the region. The Labor Market Information Service is part of the Center for Urban Research at the Sydney University of New York.
So talk a little bit about what you do at the service, projects. Well, I don't know. How do you explain the day-to-day?
Sure. I think we were formed to be a joint initiative of the City of New York's Workforce Investment Board. That's a group of professionals both from the education and nonprofit sectors, as well as from industry,
right,
who oversee the funds that come from the federal government to help people get work.
Oh, okay.
So we were to be their information source and their workforce intelligence source. After a couple of years, we kind of broke out on our own and have been working with individual clients and with funders who generously support some of our research work. We do research information tools for job seekers and for people who help job seekers. We do a lot of consulting, helping places like CUNY colleges or the New York City Department of Education,
right,
to align their programs and their whole portfolio to the real actual conditions of the labor market.
I think the website cites something about data-driven, helping the community and major stakeholders make data-driven decisions.
That help their constituents. That's right.
Right. We have been talking before we started recording about the middle-skill workforce and some projects that the service has been doing over the past year plus? A couple of years. Generally, what's the idea behind the research?
I think that, first of all, it's important to know what we're talking about when we talk about middle skill.
Right, yeah, thank
you. So middle skill is a term of art among labor economists when we're referring to jobs that typically require more than a high school diploma but less than a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that space would be certifications, non-degree awards that happen at the post-secondary level, as well as associate degrees.
Right, okay.
So the reason why it matters is because, you know, pretty much anybody could get an entry-level job on their own. Most people can. Some people have employment barriers and have some difficulty with that. But a lot of our constituents that we work with, like CUNY, for example, the workforce providers, various nonprofit agencies that are helping people who have employment barriers get into the workforce, really care about these jobs that help people get a leg up beyond entry-level jobs,
get paid a little bit more.
Provide them with some additional education and help them enter into a career, potentially a career. When you look at, for example, being a retail salesperson is obviously a possible entry point to a career, but many people really just take that job as their first job and then move into something else. What we're talking about are really those jobs that you get a little bit of training for and then you're able to enter in and move up.
Ofranima, you've been looking at this for a while. How big is this sector of the workforce? What kind of scope are we talking about?
So it used to be that there were a lot more middle skill jobs, mm-hmm. and a lot of researchers have been talking about the fact that they've really been on the decline in the past few decades. It used to be the
talking about the regionally or nationally?
Across the country, for sure, mm-hmm. and regionally as well. Mm-hmm. It used to be the majority of jobs are middle skill. Now some folks are estimating about a third nationally are middle skill.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay.
And that's really because of the decline of manufacturing.
Right.
And offshoring of manufacturing, and also because of automation. So many of the jobs that people had, unionized jobs,
sure.
And
these
well-paying
are related,
jobs.
These are two related things.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. So why the focus on middle skill when you were kind of aiming when you were sort of pointing the pencil toward new research?
I mean, because our constituents really want to help people get into those jobs, mm-hmm. really. That's this so-called sweet spot. So that you can actually have that job, maybe get a little bit more experience, a little bit more education.
I'm sorry, so this is the leg up you were talking about earlier.
Yeah,
good.
Okay.
All right. Could you talk about the structure of the research? If you've been looking at it for 2 years, how have you applied yourselves as you tackle this question?
Well, I'm going to address one set of research projects, and mm-hmm. Ofronimo is going to talk about another set, which is really our most recent work, and
sure.
something we're about to release, we're very excited about. But recently, J.P. Morgan Chase Global Philanthropies had announced that they were putting in something like $250 million into the workforce development field over a period of 5 years. And one of the first initiatives was something called New Skills at Work. A number of cities and regions around the country were awarded grants.
Mm-hmm.
We did some work with Jersey City, the Economic Development Corporation and the Office of the Mayor. And we did some work in the lower Hudson Valley
mm-hmm.
with Westchester Community College
okay.
As the lead, but with Rockland Community College and several other stakeholders from the lower Hudson Valley.
Right.
And what they wanted to know was, what are the areas where we might have a really high demand, but not enough of a supply of workers?
Right.
And particularly, they wanted to look at middle skill areas.
Okay. So they were looking for those indicators that the gap might be growing where people were sort of stuck. You were talking about the supply and the demand. You were talking about the fact that supply of workers can sort of get stuck
mm-hmm.
below this middle skill band.
That's right.
Right.
And, now I'm looking at numbers in front of me right now about New York City,
right.
But it's pretty much true around the whole metropolitan region that we have about fewer than 10% of the jobs in New York City are actually at that middle skill level.
Hmm.
And about 25% of the people, or actually 28% of the people, are middle skill. In other words, have more than a high school diploma, but less than a bachelor's degree.
They have the skills. They are in that band.
They're in that band,
but
they're too few jobs.
So
the ultimate truth that came out both with Jersey City and with Westchester, Lower Hudson Valley, was that there really wasn't a skills gap. There was not an actual set of middle skill jobs that
I'm
were
sorry,
going
so
unfilled.
The Jersey City and Hudson Valley, you were talking about those two projects you mentioned earlier. I'm with you. So that was the finding there, was that?
Well, it wasn't the finding, actually. I think that was the beginning of the research,
saying,
we know that. We really do know that we're looking at an economy right now, a labor market, with a lot of low-skill jobs
mm-hmm.
and a lot of high-skill jobs and not so many, a very skinny or hollow-in-the-middle type of labor market.
Right.
And so what we thought of, rather, was where are there perhaps an opportunity gap? And if you want to coin a new phrase, and that would be places where there are middle skill jobs, but people aren't accessing them. Certain people aren't accessing them.
Yes, right, okay.
And in Westchester, in Lower Hudson Valley, there's a very growing Latino community,
mm-hmm.
and particularly the immigrant Latino community who's coming in with less, less educational attainment.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a really great way to attract them to the public education system and to the public community college system if you can offer a connection to middle skill jobs.
If you can help them understand that there are jobs waiting for them.
Absolutely.
Sure, right,
and so the findings there were that there were great opportunities to move people, particularly the Latinos,
right.
into hospitality management, tech support, and health information.
So when I think of, we're in the transportation business at the Port Authority,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of what we do. It's the bulk of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about the value of thinking regionally versus thinking sort of in Lower Hudson or Jersey City,
mm-hmm.
I think about, okay, what's the benefit of kind of narrowing in geographically and looking bite by bite at these at small places versus sort of just keeping things at the regional scale?
Well, I think the real reason is not so much, you know, from a research perspective, it's from an application perspective.
Right.
We're looking at really the labor supply in a particular area,
yeah.
but not so much labor demand. I mean, ultimately, the labor market is the metropolitan region. So we're not necessarily looking at
okay.
jobs that are in, you know, in Jersey City or in Westchester.
Good, okay.
On the other hand, they're depending on who the stakeholders are. In Jersey City, they were really interested in, as everyone knows who's following this podcast, Jersey City has really experienced an incredible boom over
mm-hmm.
the last 20 years.
We
it's
noticed.
Got a gold, yeah, a gold coast with, you know, a ton of financial services, business support services, and transportation and logistics services.
Right.
Some of the biggest firms on the planet are in Jersey City.
Right.
And so they actually were concerned about how do we connect people in Jersey City with the jobs that seem to be coming here. To Jersey City.
Yeah.
And in that case, they our recommendations really centered around business support roles at headquarters, any kind of headquarters throughout professional services and finance, and in the sales and service roles in transportation, logistics,
okay.
and distribution.
Right.
So not the pick and pack and not the, you know, warehousing type of jobs, but really more like cargo and freight agents and customs brokers and so forth.
It might be nice to talk a little bit about methods, the methods that your team employs when you're thinking about measuring supply and demand and data sources and just how you put the pieces together when you're doing this type of work. How'd you do it?
Great. So you also asked earlier about what the methods are typically. So
yeah.
we did conduct a literature review. We had Jim Orr, who was a consultant for us,
uh-huh.
who helped us look at other regional studies of middle skill jobs.
And you stuck to the middle skill jobs track when you were doing that lit review? Sort
yeah,
of how,
absolutely.
How to make that match up? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And what he found overall was that a lot of these areas were using a few particular indicators of supply, like maybe just using the associate degree graduates in a particular area,
okay.
and then comparing that to just job ads or just projections from
right,
the
okay.
Bureau of Labor
Some
Statistics.
General assumptions so you can
yeah.
keep the analysis, you know, streamlined.
Right.
Assume there are major correlations across sources. And, yeah, right.
Sure. But the challenge with that is you might be missing out on a lot of information. So there's
sure.
more to supply than associate degree. Graduates. There's also
sure.
The unemployed. There's also people who might migrate in from other areas. So what we did with the New York City study is we tried to gather as much information as we could, as many different indicators of supply and demand.
Yeah. So if we're going to talk about the New York City study, maybe
mm-hmm.
we could talk about how it might differ from the work that you were doing in Jersey City and
mm-hmm.
Lower Hudson Valley a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Right. So, within,
or we could talk
right.
a little bit more about
mm-hmm.
methods and
sure.
kind
yeah,
of wrap
no,
that
I think
up.
I think the really big difference between
mm-hmm.
them is it's not so much. I mean, the data that we use was similar,
mm-hmm.
But how we arranged it and the purpose of the research is different.
That's what I was getting
so
at.
So the purpose of the research in Jersey City and the Lower Hudson Valley was to really look for opportunities to increase educational programming and to bring people into the economy into better paid positions
uh-huh.
that were being left behind in a booming economy.
Okay,
so the purpose
most efficient use possible mm-hmm. of the educational resources available.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
And here it was really to take a look at how we're doing as a collective system in New York City,
mm-hmm.
whether we are oversupplying, undersupplying,
okay.
or we're in balance in
just
terms
a general
of,
snapshot of
that's
so
right.
more more agnostic to sort of what you were expecting to find.
Well, the idea is CUNY, you know, serves about 500,000 people a year,
mm-hmm.
250,000 in degree programs and about 250,000 in continuing ed programs. So we really are, you know, an incredibly important institution.
That's big.
And
that's a lot of people.
You know, we're also somewhat of a loose confederation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that at this point, we have not gotten to the point where we understand exactly how many people were preparing for what occupations.
Right.
And so
sounds like a good question.
Yeah,
to ask.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so this was really for CUNY, but it was also for the private philanthropy community
mm-hmm.
who fund people to train people.
Right.
You know, thousands and thousands of people around the city.
Right.
And the idea being that we don't all rush to a particular occupation because it seems like it's in demand, because we might end up overflowing and actually...
Signals are tough to read, particularly temporally. When you're thinking longitudinal, it's tough to look at.
Yeah, and that's what this study is really about, is try to begin to get a, or at least develop a methodology where we can begin to get a handle on the balance of supply and demand.
Right. So I cut you off when you were talking about methods, so I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so we sought to find as many indicators of supply and demand as possible. Mm-hmm. So, for example, for supply, we gathered information on the number of associate degree graduates, which we can get from the U.S. Department of Education.
Right.
But then we also knew that some sources are not publicly or even privately available. Mm-hmm. So, for example, CUNY prepares so many continuing education students who get certificates. So we did our own survey of the CUNY programs. We went to them directly, and we gathered information on how many people have completed their programs. Mm-hmm. We also did a survey of nonprofit workforce providers. We sought out as many sources as we could. We also obtained data on unemployment insurance claimants. We looked at the number of people who were licensed to perform certain middle skill occupations.
Okay.
And we did focus on healthcare this year because healthcare is certainly the biggest sector in New York City.
When you say you focused on healthcare, you mean that the New York City study you really zeroed in on?
Absolutely.
And set some
healthcare
parameters
occupations.
Before you
right.
started
That's
working.
Right.
Right.
So when researchers conduct middle skill occupations.
And sorry, this year.
Yeah.
So this is sort of the.
Yeah.
This, I guess I should. I never really asked.
This is the first
asked.
Annual.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is meant to
first
be a
annual.
Long-term. Okay.
That's the plan, yeah.
Right.
With a focus each year on a given
mm-hmm.
subsector.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Oh,
thanks.
Sure.
But yeah, I think what we've tried to do is try to capture multiple dimensions
mm-hmm.
of both supply and demand,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the reason, rather than just,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mentioned before we threw a bunch of data at it, it wasn't quite exactly like that. We did look at correlations between various indicators, and
right.
we did actually kind of jettison some of the indicators that seemed to be duplicative.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we're really looking at both the stock and the flow of people.
Mm-hmm.
So who's currently actually available for work
right.
In a particular occupation, and those people, it's very hard to say in a lot of other areas, but in healthcare, it's not so hard.
Right.
Because we know mm-hmm. people are licensed, and we know they graduated from, say, nursing programs or...
Right.
phlebotomy programs or dietetic technician programs.
I'm imagining a stock
yeah.
and flow of a workforce in my head.
So
tough
the
time
flow,
doing the diagram is,
yeah.
it's not coming
So
there.
The stock is current and then the flow would
yeah.
be people coming through the system.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
if you're, you know, we've got an average number of people coming out of dietetic technician programs and let's say CUNY is graduating 300 a year, we will put that in as an indicator as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then for demand, we also looked at job ads that were posted for all these different occupations. We looked at the Bureau of Labor Statistics projections on which occupations are expected to grow at what percentage rate.
Right.
And one really great source that we were able to obtain was from the 1199 union. So a lot of the healthcare
oh,
positions are unionized,
right.
and you know a lot of these occupations might not be posted online. So we were able to obtain data directly from them on how many placements
That's cool.
were made through
Nice.
Their employment center and use that as an indicator of how much demand for these occupations there would be.
Mm-hmm.
Should have said early on that the first thing we had to do was identify which occupations in New York City are middle skill.
Yes. So what'd you do?
So we used a variety of different methods. So we looked at how they're defined by the Department of Labor in terms of occupations that require more than a high school degree but less than a bachelor's degree. We use that to narrow it down. We looked at the composition of the workforce,
mm-hmm.
Which people in occupations actually have middle skill education. So we're able to use a number of different ways to narrow it down. And ultimately, the tiebreaker was looking at the New York City workforce. So if something was a middle skill occupation nationally but not in New York City, we then turned to job ads to see what employers were requesting locally. So we ended up with 106 different occupations.
Right.
For the
healthcare specific.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
at the two-digit, you know.
That's 106 total.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And then
excuse me.
Within that is about
right.
30. Was
right.
It?
I'm
yes.
sorry. I drifted.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. So
106 middle skill occupations
yeah.
total. Of those, 30 were in the healthcare professions.
Field. Right, got it.
And we looked very specifically at the 30 occupations. For the other
mm-hmm.
non-healthcare occupations, we looked at them at a more aggregate level, looking at just at the occupation groups. So, for example, installation, maintenance, and repair all together.
So now you're back in the other two studies, not New York City.
No, that's this study,
yeah.
but we focused entirely in detail on the healthcare occupations, but we're releasing the results of the other ones, the other occupations in an aggregate form.
Okay, all right, now I understand. Yeah, so your deep dive was into healthcare, but you positioned yourself already for the to look at all sectors.
Right.
I got it.
Yeah, so once we identified the occupations, we found the indicators. We got the data on, say, how many people completed certain certificate programs or associate degree programs. We looked at how many ads were requested. So what we wanted to do is, rather than just have a strict comparison of supply and demand, and in the literature, a lot of times, sometimes it's just taking the difference between, you know, here's the supply minus the demand, that's your result, whether it's under or oversupplied.
But then you have to contextualize it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and also, we don't think it's realistic. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's a lot of double counting, and as we just discussed, a lot of the data is collected in different ways over different time periods, and so there really is no way to combine this data. And I think, you know, we thought that, we hypothesized that when we walked into this project, but we really did recruit an awful lot of very skilled and experienced economists from around the country, including Jim Orr, who is from the Federal Reserve Board, Chris King from University of Texas, the Ray Marshall Human Resource Center, Shane Spaulding from the Urban Institute, Alicia Modestino from Northwestern, also formerly from the Boston Fed, and I'm sure I'm leaving people out, and I apologize if I'm leaving them out, but some really impressive people, and they all agreed with us that we were really doing the best you possibly could given the data that's available.
Right. Yeah, so what we did with all these indicators, taking supply and demand separately, is we actually normalized the indicators. So let's say all the associate degree graduates in 2011, by the way, we used a time period 2011 through 2015, so we get a sense of what the supply and demand looks like currently.
Right.
So we normalize those indicators. So let's say certain occupations, like a medical assistant, has the most graduates that we would put everything on a scale of 0 to 1. So if they have the most graduates, it'll be a number 1. If they have the least, it'll be a 0, and so on. So we did that for each indicator. And then we ended up normalizing those indicators and taking the average, because we know that some occupations have more indicators of supply than others. There are some occupations where we didn't find a lot of indicators, where there weren't, for example, associate degree programs, there weren't community certificate programs.
Oh,
all
right.
We had
okay.
was citywide employment or the number of unemployment insurance claimants.
Yeah.
So we took an average instead, and we ended up normalizing that average.
Okay.
And then what we got was a final result. So So what we did was we had our own scale, so if an occupation ended up between 0 and 0.333, it was low, it was considered a low supply, 0.334 to 0.667, that's moderate, and then beyond that, 0.668 to 1, that's high. And then we did the same on the demand side. So then we were able to say, okay, here are all the low supply occupations, here are the moderate, here are the high.
Right.
For supply, then do the same with demand. Here are the low, moderate, and high.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put them on we made a matrix to see where they fell. So
before identifying some surprises in the findings, what did you generally see in New York when it comes to healthcare and the middle skill gap, if it exists?
Yeah, so what was, in a way surprising, was that there weren't a lot of quote-unquote mismatches. For the most part, things were matching up. So most occupations were either both low supply and low demand, moderate supply and moderate demand, high supply and high demand. There were very few instances where that was not the case.
Okay, so the market's working fairly well, at least
front. Yeah, in the sense that the number of people that are being prepared for occupations seems to match up to
the
what
imbalance.
The demand is.
Right.
It's in balance. There was one occupation that seemed to be undersupplied, called health technologists and technicians all other. That's a formal name. I know it's a little clunky there. But that can include people who do work as, let's say, dialysis technicians. So that one was something that might have been just a little bit undersupplied. But other than that, there were some occupations that seemed to be oversupplied, namely medical assistants, dental assistants, EMTs, phlebotomists, for example.
Okay.
Pharmacy techs.
Yeah. Those were the ones that were the supply.
Right, here we go.
So those occupations were on the a higher supply. or moderate supply scale, but low in demand.
I think what's really important, just all of these are really are definitely true. We had a group of stakeholders from 1199 and from the New York Alliance of Careers in Healthcare and so forth, number of CUNY people, DOE, Department of Ed people, who were commenting on the methodology and on the presentation all along. And one of the interpretations that's important is that, for example, phlebotomy is the type of certification that you would get if you were an LPN. So there may be a lot of people getting phlebotomy certification, and it would appear to be oversupplied, but they're not necessarily oversupplying the demand for phlebotomists. They're actually filling other jobs. So does that make sense? So we're really looking at a tic-tac-toe grid of low, medium, high, low, medium, high for supply and demand. And what we're looking for is stuff that's not on the diagonal.
I'm also wondering which of these, I was doing the math myself. And I'm also wondering which of these, I'm not sure what I would call them, the categories, which of these categories might be the biggest in aggregate, just in terms of count. So like,
The number in terms of the supply. Definitely.
Numbers,
the medical assistants, the licensed practical and licensed vocational nurses.
Nursing
assistants. Those are really in high supply and high numbers of individuals that we find. Either completing programs or that are just part of the workforce in general.
Right. I was looking to see which of those big categories might spill off that safe axis.
Right.
But yeah, it looks like things are fairly balanced.
That's right.
Low demand, low supply, high demand, high supply.
That's right. And so I think that,
radio's harder. Podcasts are horrible for visualization. It's pretty clean.
So we definitely want to be able to say something about our findings. And what we would normally want to say is the way that it was put by one of our city colleagues from the city government was, put the brakes on, put the gas on, or just keep cruising.
Yeah, good.
And I think that we would say, by the best measurement, we possibly can come up with, it appears that you put the brakes on medical assistance. And this is all things considered now. I know it's not the podcast, but it's all things considered. Even knowing what the occupational projections are, that there is a really strong occupational projection for medical assistance, and yet it's not as strong as the number of people that we're actually putting out and the number of programs that we have going.
And just finding the balance right before we start, right when we just met 30 minutes ago or whatever, we were talking about the fact that the value in inherent in just identifying equilibrium, just identifying sort of the fact that you might have a good match, because then, the gas gets saved for other findings.
That's
and
right.
Other purposes. So.
We were happily surprised.
Yes, absolutely. Right.
I think that is an important finding.
Yeah.
I think a good supplement to a lot of this work, which is on the whole quantitative, would be some qualitative information. Interviews with employers on whether they're finding candidates and people who've completed programs that actually have the types of qualifications that they need. So even if people are finishing programs, we don't necessarily know that they're meeting the qualifications that an employer might have.
And we also don't know whether the programs themselves are designed in such a way as to meet the demands. So, for example, there may be some very high quality certifications that aren't associated with licensing, but there are national associations that employers really seek candidates who have these certifications.
Right.
And we don't know whether the programs, this study will not tell us whether the programs are actually granting those particular certifications.
Oh.
We just know that they're getting a certification that leads to qualifying for a particular job.
Okay.
So a medical assistant, for example, but not whether they're going to be coming from AAMA, NHA, or which certification program.
Yeah. And the report, too, has a great section where for each occupation we list what certifications the employers are looking for. Mm-hmm. So we looked at the real-time job ads in New York City, and we were able to list what the top certifications
are. Does anyone else do that matching, or is that just something that you wound up doing as part of the work?
Yeah, I mean, this brings us full circle, because that's what we do. That's, when I was mentioning,
right.
I mean, that's what we do. That's kind of our bread and butter, is to help people align their training programs to what the demand is.
That jumps out as automatic value.
Yep.
And also, too, I noticed that for the licensed professions, there were not that many schools that were actually offering direct certifications that lead to licensing programs. We looked at data from New York State.
Right. You have to be registered to to offer licenses, and so there were not that many even in New York City.
Yeah.
Okay. Afronima, Leslie, thanks for joining us. Thanks for talking about this fascinating research, and we'll be looking for the reports in August.
Yes.
The Labor Market Information Service actually released the report in late August as we were still editing this interview. Look for the Middle Skill Jobs Report on the LMIS's website. That's www.gc.cuny.edu/LMIS. Also check out the Port Authority's monthly economic indicators newsletter for the month of August. That can be found on the Port Authority's website under the About the Port Authority tab. Thanks for listening.